It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right. This is one of those times where I'm just like, how did I have to end up with this particular co-host? Because I don't know if you're going to understand because of your weird eating habits. Have you ever had Hawaiian pizza?
I believe so. Before I became a vegetarian, I think I did. Okay. A couple times. Okay. Yeah.
How did you feel about it?
Well, that was good.
I also think Hawaiian pizza is good. I grew up being fine with pineapple on pizza, but I would eat the pineapple off of it. And then I would eat whatever was left. I didn't generally leave it on. When I got older, I left it on. And I like Hawaiian. It is not historically one of my first go-tos, but I like it. And there's been a lot of grief about it lately, and it's just been bringing it up more in my head. So I've been taking the opportunity to order it. And what I've discovered is it sucks now, kind of. I think it's purely a quality of ingredients thing. I do not think the combination is bad, but like the saddest pineapple on top of the most like boring processed ham thing or whatever. So I think I'm going to have to invent a new definitive Hawaiian pizza for everyone to enjoy.
I liked Hawaiian pizza so much that when I became a vegetarian, I would still make it with like fake Canadian bacon or whatever. It was still good, but
real pineapple.
Yeah. So
weren't as vegetarian as you could have been.
I've also been hearing this thing about pineapple on pizza, like it's a new controversy or something. And I didn't realize that, so I still get pizza with pineapple on it sometimes. I think the vegetable garden from The Wedge has pineapple on it. I've just never had any complaint about, I wouldn't say, I don't like ask for pineapple on pizza or whatever, but if it's what comes with that thing that they've made, it's fine. So I wasn't sure why this controversy was sort of kind of on social media or whatever, but that's interesting that you noticed that the quality of the pineapple wasn't very good on the pizza. Well, on the meat too, I suppose.
Ordered it a few different places recently, and I'm like, this is boring.
Huh.
But like, I know I've had good, and a lot of it is like, I imagine something that has no flavor, but the consistency of canned pineapple chunks. Like, and that's the thing, is it's just incredibly flavorless. Huh. I think I got to get some good fresh on there and then some good fatty ham or Canadian bacon. That has some good stuff into it. And then just getting the sauce. The sauce is also a factor, but yeah. I had again last night and I was, or not last night, a couple nights ago. And I was just like, I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to save it for everyone and make the correct Hawaiian pizza.
This seems like, okay, so the last time I had a Twinkie was maybe, I don't know, a decade ago. And before that, it had been easily 20 years before, right? But I remember them being good. I remember liking them just fine. And I don't know if I bought it or someone gave it to me. I thought, oh, wow, this will be a treat, because for no reason at all, I just haven't had a Twinkie in 20 years or whatever. And it was not good. And, you know, some people fault my memory on that, which that's valid, but is it just that, or are they just not as good as they used to be? I don't know.
Well, it's hard to say. Also, keep in mind, your palate is a very different creature throughout your life.
I
have found a lot of things that I liked as a child because it was just a shit ton of sweet. Now I mean, some of those are still good, but now we'll get ones where I'm like, yeah, it's a shit ton of sweet surrounded by the most artificial nasty cake-like product or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I am too distracted. Back in the day, I would have been like, it's just sugar, I love it. But now I'm like, yeah, I can, I'm paying more attention to the other aspects of it, and I'm not as into it.
But I seem to remember when, I mean, I, it wasn't just the sugar I liked about Twinkies. They had a certain flavor, and the cream was a nice consistency. I mean, I remember liking all kinds of things about it that just don't seem true now, but maybe I just don't remember.
I didn't eat a lot of Twinkie. I was a Tiger Tails kid. I always liked the weird ones, the ones that were usually for a limited time, or so, like the Tiger Tails and orange cupcakes, because you didn't used to get the orange ones as often.
I don't know, but it's like people swear by soda, soft drinks that have real sugar in them versus corn syrup, and I mean, I think I also notice a difference, but I don't know if that's just in our heads, we who think that, or if that's a real thing.
It's very hard to tell because we are not in the upper echelons of power. And they're the only ones who know if they've secretly been changing the formulas on us.
Do you think that's a thing, real sugar versus corn syrup? Like the real sugar's better?
I'm sure it is for some people. I don't think I could tell the difference.
Oh, okay.
And I know those things affect people's bodies differently, and that would definitely have a different impact. But in terms of just taste, I am both willing to believe there are people who could taste the difference and don't think I'm probably one of them.
Got it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast brave enough to say things were better when we were kids. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 659.
And it probably sounds like I am sick. I am not sick exactly. For those of you who don't live where we live, winter decided to finally be like, just so you know, I'm coming soon. So now it's like cold and everything is sealed up, and we are done with the outside for a few months. And the change has made it very weird for my allergens. This frequently happens whenever we hit a period where we're either opening the house for the first time or closing it for the first time of the season. Suddenly, I either become extra allergic to what's inside, or I become extra allergic to what's outside. You know. I have been severely stuffed up for several days. But also, today is confusing. We are recording and posting on the same day. I don't know if we've ever done that before. It's very weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
Don't get used to it, people. This is not... Wow, I really do sound rough. Excuse me.
You do.
I think it's all starting to drain through. For those of you just joining us, we don't do anything Halloween related. Just a principle we have. What we do have is a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want, questions, topics, comments, essays. I came up with a new idea. People should write in questions they know the answer to, but they're pretty sure we don't. And just see what kind of random bullshit we come up with. We are two relatively straight, relatively white, relatively men. We should be very good at that. Anyway, the hat magically forwards the emails. We read them. We talk about them. That's it. That's how it is. So you've had 9 days, one of which at least was Halloween.
Mm.
So how's that been?
The weekend overall was good. We've been playing Diablo 4.
Oh.
Because, you know, they have a nice couch co-op or whatever. And that's been really fun. That's been super nice. Fun. It was cold over the Halloween weekend.
It was.
And overcast, too. We usually like to, you know, the full moon in October, we like to watch it come up and stuff. But it was overcast that day, so we missed that. And it was kind of cold and muddy, I think, outside. So we didn't really get out the way we like to on October weekends. But, of course, the peak leaves were the weekend before anyway. So we just enjoyed the playing a couch co-op video game, and we haven't done that in ages.
Yeah.
And it's a very fun game, and we really liked playing it. So then Halloween came along, and I was able, the practicum's going really well, and I was able to get some certain hours in early and certain things done early. So I was able just to not do anything all weekend long and not do anything on Monday either. So except, you know, spend time with Abby. She took the day off because Halloween's also our wedding anniversary. I don't know if people knew that.
Oh,
so we tried to take a whole bunch of.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing because since we're common law married, you know.
I was gonna say it's the anniversary when you went in and filled out the form.
Well, it's a date that you have to specify. Like this is the day. Because the rules are you have to present as married and so on and so forth. And it's like, well, when did you start doing that? Well, we didn't really know when that started happening. And in fact, we didn't really do that per se. We just stopped correcting people when they assumed we were married or whatever.
One day, William came to Abby's door and said, trick or treat, because it's Halloween. And she was like, I don't have any candy. You want to move in? And he was like, yeah, whatever.
So we had to think, okay, well, you know, we can't go back to a date when we were correcting people and say, well, no, we're not married or whatever. So we couldn't go too far back. That
would make you liars.
Yeah, that would make us liars. So we had to go back to the date where we're pretty sure after that date, you know, everyone assumed we were married or treated us like we're married. I think you even would say we were married because you thought it was ridiculous.
I actually got it backwards. I used to call her your fake wife.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And she called me out on it. And in the process, I was like, fine, I'll stop. But I also was like, also, that's backwards. I didn't mean like you look married, but you're not. I mean, you pretend you're not married, but you are. So it's secret life.
Anyway, so we decided like the general year that we would pick. So like I said, we wouldn't be liars. And then we was like, well, what date should we pick? Because it doesn't really matter. Any date in, it was 2013. Any date in 2013, we can just pick it. We thought, oh, Halloween, we'll just pick that date. So
some kid came to the door and was like, are you two married? And you looked at each other and you're like, yeah, whatever.
So that's just
the end.
That's the date we mark as our wedding anniversary, because that's the date that's going to be on any official document as far as.
You got to write. I'm telling you, there's a lot of great stories that involve we got married on Halloween that you just could create out of this.
So anyway, I took the whole the weekend. I didn't do anything. Just spent time with her on Monday also, and then we had Halloween. The kids came over, and we did take Delmer out trick or treating, but he seemed less interested in it this time. And I think we figured out why. Delmer and I take walks all the time. He'll come over and he'll seem restless. And it's like, hey, you want to take a walk, Grandpa? And yeah. So we take long walks and he decides where we go.
Okay.
And so we went out for trick or treat.
People just give him candy.
We went out for trick or treat. We got to the part of the sidewalk where he and I usually, you know, take off toward the park or whatever. And he started going that way. No, Delmer, we're going trick or treating. He looked at us and he looked and then just kept going. It's like, no, we're going on a long walk. And so we convinced him to come with us and to, like, you know, knock on doors and stuff. But I don't think he ever really got it. Like, this isn't my thing. This isn't what I do when I go out to take a walk with Grandpa.
He's going to be a health nut.
And he did it a couple times, you know, he said thank you, you know, all this stuff, but it's like he never, like, he just wanted to do what he usually does. And so we only went to a few houses, and you know, he's 2 and a half, so he didn't really care. And we came back and we had a nice big dinner here. They had duck. Abby had never had duck before, but it turned out great. Ooh. Everyone liked it. And she made me this great chestnut pie. It has, you know, had mushrooms and stuff in it. Oh, so good. So yeah, that was really great. But I kind of had to turn in early because I was going to my site the next day. Usually we take the next day off. So we'll have several days that we can spend together and just goof around. But I had to get back to things. But the practicum is going really good. I'm really happy with it. And there's a couple big projects coming up that I'm a little nervous about, but I think everything's going to work out fine. But yeah, Halloween was great. Did you guys do anything for Halloween or?
No, actually we kind of very much didn't do anything for Halloween. We almost never get trick or treaters. And so we finally have started turning off all the lights because the alternative was buy a bag of candy. Maybe 5 kids show up and then we have a shit ton of candy that we just eat, which we don't like doing. So
it was very cold.
After a while, we were like, nothing.
It was very cold that night, and I thought there wouldn't be anybody out, but there were tons. I haven't seen this many kids out. It was amazing. But even though it was cold.
So then we actually picked up some dinner on the way home. And then we actually talked. Trish and her sister and I are planning a trip in January to celebrate both mine and the sister's birthday. Her birthday is the day after mine.
Oh, day after.
And she turns 40 this year, so we're doing the whole thing. So we happened to do that night. Trish got a little tired of spooky season earlier than usual. I think because we didn't have a lot of good luck with some of the movies we watched, but so no, we didn't really do anything for Halloween itself.
Had I seen The Nun 2 last time I talked to you? I think I did.
No.
No?
You've now seen The Nun 2.
Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yep. Judgment Day.
Nunner. Sorry, the Nunner.
Nunya. Well,
son of Nun.
It wasn't bad. I mean, I think it was a little better than the last one.
Just a perfect opening. You can't get much better than it. It wasn't bad.
I mean, if you like those, that whole Conjuring thing, or Insidious maybe is in that category too. I think you'll like it. I think it was a little better than the first one, which a lot of people had problems with. And I did too. The first couple times I saw it, last time I saw it, I was like, oh, this isn't, I mean, there's one really dumb thing in it. And otherwise it's like, this isn't that bad. So I don't know. I don't know if I could recommend it to anybody. I don't think you would like it because I don't think you any of this stuff in that.
No.
General bucket. But no. I thought it was okay. So it seems like there was something else we wanted to see, but wasn't out yet or whatever. I think we do want to see American Horror Story this season, but I guess we'll just wait until it's done.
They also had American Horror Stories this year, which is a separate individual episode anthology thing they did over on Hulu.
I'll have to look at that maybe. I still am a fan of that whole, like, the whole concept is good, and I think it's mostly executed well. And as I've often said, even when it's executed poorly, I admire the effort. It's like, I see what you're trying to do in there. It didn't quite work, but cool. You know, good effort. There's only one season that I could say I would probably never watch again. And that's just because it wasn't really in the genre.
The Smurf one.
It wasn't bad for what it was. It just wasn't, it didn't belong there. I mean, maybe I'll watch it again for other reasons, but not when I'm in the mood for American Horror Story. But how was your 9 days?
Watching a lot of stuff.
Oh, good.
We are finally off our spooky season normal things. We are watching what did Trish pick? What are we watching? Oh, we're watching season two of Our Flag Means Death.
Oh yeah. We thought that was really good.
I'm enjoying that a lot.
Yeah.
It's a little more focused this season, which I guess makes sense. Like it's really got a purpose to its story, and it's going, the first one sort of meandered in an interesting way, and this one seems very direct. But yeah, no, I'm enjoying that. And now we've started season two of Loki.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet. I don't know if we will or not. Man, we probably will.
It's, I mean, things they're happening. there's a lot going on, but you know, it's a fun time, whatever.
But Hiddleston's just one of those guys that's usually fun to watch no matter what. I mean, he's just very,
yeah.
He's very talented. It's just fun to see what he does.
And I must grudgingly admit he and Owen Wilson have a little bit of chemistry. I don't normally say that about Owen Wilson. I'm not a particularly big fan of his, but they do pretty well. We tried.
There are no Pedro Pascal and Nicolas Cage,
and anyone on the planet.
Well, that's true.
Pedro Pascal and
that's true, but Nicolas Cage, that was through the roof. Those two guys. That was really good.
I don't think I told you about this. So there's this video game called Dead by Daylight. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I've heard of it, yeah.
It is one of these asymmetrical competitions where, in particular, in this version, they've got a whole story behind it all, but somebody plays an evil supernatural killer and everybody else plays survivors. And the survivors have to, like, power up these generators before they're killed so that they can escape. And the bad guy, to make it a challenge, has to like grab you and put you on, I think, meat hooks a certain number of times. And then only then can they really kill you. Yeah, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, like he hooked up. And so then it's a thing. So people will be stuck on hooks and like other people come in and try and rescue them without the killer finding out. I don't know. I've never actually played the game, but it's been hugely popular. It's kind of been out for a while.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's been hugely popular. And the main reason it's been hugely popular is licensing and or theft. They have licensed a lot of characters from other games. I mean, from other movies and stuff. So like Michael Myers from Halloween, Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street. You can play as these characters. I watched one recently where somebody was the Xenomorph from Alien. Things like this. And they've started incorporating he's either really bored or his camera has frozen up. I can't tell which. Your face went just yours dead. And I finally figured out that wasn't you. That was a frozen camera. You were just like.
Yeah.
Anyway. And then they started incorporating famous survivor characters and stuff. So like Laurie Strode from the Halloween movies. You can play as her. Or they actually had a limited time thing where you could be Steve from Stranger Things. You could buy him as a survivor character. And okay. Stuff. The reason I bring this up is this year, their big thing, and they had a whole marketing campaign. And this game is 10, 15 years old. This is an old game now. Was they had a new one you could purchase, Nicolas Cage. And it wasn't Nicolas Cage's character from a certain movie.
Just Nicolas Cage.
It's just Nicolas Cage as one of the survivor characters. And so, yeah, you could just play as him, which was really fun because it led to a point where we watched, I watched people playing it and Leon from Resident Evil sacrificed himself at the last moment to the killer so that Nicolas Cage could escape. That was pretty fun to watch. We tried Interview with the Vampire, the series, which is on AMC Plus, but you could watch the whole first season on HBO Max for like a week or whatever. And so we decided to give it a shot, and then we decided not to anymore.
Not good, huh?
It's very good period piece gay porn. Real straightforward, not a bad time in that sense. I think Trish put it best. She forgot Anne Rice characters are all just assholes. They're all just sort of like dickish to each other, no pun intended, for no reason. That, yeah, after a couple episodes, we were just like, nah, I don't really care what happens. But there's a lot of pretty men having pretty sex. So if that's your deal, you can probably find better things on the internet. But if that's your deal and you're scared of the internet, go nuts.
You're scared of the internet?
Scared of the internet. Then I watched a bunch of movies. I don't know what order. Some of these are not good. Some of these are really good. All right, let's start with Trick or Treat. You ever see Trick or Treat?
Yep.
How do you feel about Trick or Treat?
Well, okay, so on one hand, it's, you know, it's really sort of in the slasher genre, I guess, and that's not usually my thing. But I also thought it was kind of clever in some places, in some ways. I thought that maybe I'd be interested in watching it again. Like, it, you know, I've watched it once. I didn't, you know, all the expectations get swept away and challenged. And now that I've watched it once, if I watch it again, maybe I'll appreciate other things about it or whatever, catch things I missed. I haven't done that, but I probably will. Because again, it's not going to be less gross. It's pretty gross in a lot of places, and that's just not my thing. But it is clever in some ways that I do appreciate. And I kind of like the main character that they created. I do kind of like that character and that whole concept. So I don't know. Maybe I'll see it again. But I would say I generally liked it, with the caveat that it's not normally my thing.
Well, as is tradition in these situations, you have an expressed opinion that is very different from mine. And yet I feel like you and I feel exactly the same about it. we do this a lot. So I've been meaning to see it for years. Because a lot of various places say it's really good, and people whose opinions I trust say it's really good, and all this. And it's a Halloween themed horror anthology. Sounds good to me. And I did know that it has an iconic character in it named Sam, who is this little kid trick-or-treater who sort of is on the fringes of all the things happening. It's interconnected. It's an anthology, but they're interconnected stories in the same location and things. And he's sort of the bad guy, but also sort of just the mascot in a way. This was what I had. And so I was like, okay. And for some reason, I didn't really understand. I would show Trish the trailer and she's like, nah, I don't think I'm interested. But fine, whatever. So I watched it by myself. Didn't like it. It felt kind of hokey in a lot of ways. It felt gross for gross's sake. It was it's extremely problematic in certain ways. It has a few different portrayals and considerations of neuroatypical individuals, all of which are problematic in their own special ways. It felt very just sort of, yeah, just like trying to be nasty. Not my kind of thing. But so I watch it. Immediately afterward, I watch CZ's World's Horror History on the character of Sam. And what I learn is that movie is the culmination of a whole thing. The character of Sam was doodled by the filmmaker when he was like a teenager, as this weird little like creepy cute monster for Halloween or whatever. But it eventually became his senior animation project in film school that drew a lot of attention to the short film. And then went on to, there are comic books based on it, and he is supposed to be this recurring folkloric character And he shows up in all these different iterations over all these different years. And it was this whole deal before it became a movie.
Mm.
And the character concept sounds very cool to me. Like, the lore behind this all seems very cool.
Yeah, so me too. I think that that's what I think.
I like too. That. I don't think that movie is a movie that I like. So that's where I put that, I guess.
I mean, yeah, that, once again, linear criticisms. I think I know what you're talking about with most of that stuff, and you're not wrong. Again, not usually my thing, but I don't know. I liked, again,
it had like a very earlier vibe. Like, it felt like a horror movie I would have seen in an earlier, more sort of nastier time.
It, for, not in a good way. Yeah, not in a good way.
Yeah.
But yeah, the lore, that character, the lore of it, and some of the things that they did were sort of clever. If, and some of them were still really gross, but I don't know. I thought it was, I also looked at it a little more as a commentary on, like, some of the things that were problematic seemed like they were poking fun at the horror genre and the ways it's problematic those ways. So I guess I took some of that stuff as a little bit satirical, but maybe I'm giving it too much credit. I don't know.
Heck of a cast, including a lot of people who weren't famous yet but would shortly become famous. And yeah, it was very interesting. We watched the 1998 Kevin Bacon vehicle Stir of Echoes.
Never seen that.
And I had never seen it either, and it popped back up on my radar because I knew something about it. And apparently it's basically a movie that came and went very quickly because the marketing made it look very similar to The Sixth Sense, and it came out a month after The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm. And it's not The Sixth Sense, and so everybody was disappointed. But I'd heard it's kind of good things, and, you know, Kevin Bacon, admittedly, that's probably past his peak career, but he's still a pretty big deal at that point. So I thought I'd check it out. And it's bad, but I kind of recommend it because it's bad in the sense I've been trying to pin my finger on it. The late 90s in particular kind of felt that every movie had to be something slash comedy, like even when it wasn't at all funny. Like, it's a similar thing to when people talk about with Marvel movies, and like, no matter the stakes or the vibe, it has to be quippy. The 90s kind of had that. So there's like a lot of stuff in the movie that shouldn't, like, is kind of played jokey, even though the movie is not a funny movie.
Mm.
So it becomes this sort of weird, did they mean to do that sort of thing that I found incredibly entertaining. But the wife less so. All right. We're getting down to the ones that actually matter. I watched a lot of movies. The Others. I believe I've talked about The Others on this show before.
Yeah, I think we have.
Largely put it up as the second scariest movie I've ever seen after the original Evil Dead. Though I did freely admit a lot of that had to do with it had a lot of jump scares in it. And I remember those messing with me. I haven't seen it since the first time, many decades ago.
Mm.
It's very strange to watch a second time. I don't know what to compare it to. Like, there's a twist to the movie The Others that's kind of a big deal. If you already know it going in, it becomes a completely different movie.
Mm, I'd say, like, that's true, yeah.
The whole storyline is drastically different when you know what's going on. It's also incredibly transparent once you know what's going on. Like, people are not subtle in how they talk about it. It's just, you can't see it if you don't know that's what you're looking for. But once you do, it's everywhere. It was just such a weirdly, and not scary at all, for the record, because the tension is gone. I know what's happening. And so it becomes just a very straightforward drama.
Yeah,
not bad, but just a very different movie. And I very seldom have had that. That's because, like, Get Out is another one I love to talk about. Watching a second time is fascinating. But it's just fascinating from a perspective. It doesn't seem like a different film. This one was just so different. It was very weird to see. But I do want to talk about one other, because it's a movie that I do want to talk about too. One of my niblings finally convinced me to watch In the Tall Grass on Netflix, the adaptation of Stephen King and Joe Hill novella by the same name. I think I tried to watch it before. The beginning was very familiar to me. But no, it's no good. I don't know if you've seen it. It's no good.
Yeah, we've seen it. I don't remember what we thought of it exactly.
It has your favorite buddy from all the Conjuring movies in it.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, what's his name?
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to realize if he's in a movie, I might not like it. I don't know. I think he's a good actor, but... No, it was very predictable, and it was okay. So in the later, definitely the later portion of his career, assuming he doesn't live to 112, Stephen King and his son, Joe Hill's his son, I think, collaborated on a novella. A fairly short novella.
I think they collaborated on, like, Dr. Sleep and everything, too.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying the story of this is...
Right.
He and his son collaborated on a short novella called In the Tall Grass. Then later on, somebody else decided to write that into a feature-length film and direct same film. And it's exactly as good as that would be. Like... It's watchable, but it doesn't need to exist. So yeah, skip that. But
wait a minute. Watchable, but doesn't need to exist. I feel like you're describing me and this podcast.
Now, come on. We have been over this. I am tired of hearing you refer to yourself as watchable.
Oh, sorry. I'll stop.
Really not. Sometimes I have to go like this while we're recording. I can't cope with it. We're all agreed you don't need to exist, but
not the watchable part. Okay.
I don't like you going around saying you're watchable. No, I had a film that I remembered enjoying, and then I made my wife watch it, and it was still good.
Oh.
That doesn't happen nearly as often as it should.
Right.
I have probably talked about this before. It's a movie called Behind the Mask: The Rise of Leslie Vernon. And you have to watch out, because I typed this into my Roku and it said, oh yeah, sure, here it is, Behind the Mask: Rise of Leslie Vernon. It's on all these things, including, I think, Pluto TV. So I was like, okay, let's go watch it there. And then it started giving me this movie about making a short superhero film and what it did for. And it turned out that was a different documentary called Behind the Mask. Unrelated. So I had to leave out of there and eventually find it somewhere else. But anyway, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon is a faux documentary. And it is set in a universe where supernatural slashers are real. So, like, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers are all actual events that occurred. And, like, you can look them up in the newspaper and stuff like this.
Yeah, I've talked about this.
And, yeah, and this guy who claims to be the next one of these supernatural killers invites... graduate school documentary crew to sort of follow him around to see how it's done. And it is sort of a horror comedy, but it's also, I had forgotten how deeply meta it is. Like, that's sort of the point of it, is you're going behind the scenes. And so it looks at things differently. But it also becomes its own pretty good story. I think it's very compelling. It's pretty well written. It does, at a certain point, abandon the documentary POV completely. And I sort of get it. But that kind of thing always bothers me. I'm like, if this is your thing, you got to put in the work to do your thing.
Yeah,
like,
commit. Yes,
you're causing more trouble. You can't just do it while it's easy and then switch. But I don't think it like ruined it particularly for me. And it would have been tricky to adjust. But I liked it a lot. I am a sucker for a good faux documentary. Maybe even more than a found footage. I'm a big mockumentary fan.
Yeah, I like mockumentaries too.
I thought that one was pretty good. Yeah, I think that's it. We actually have an email.
We do.
Let's hear the email.
It's from Azure Talon.
Okay, never mind.
The subject is
Let's talk some more about the Behind the Mask, the other one, the movie that I didn't watch. Let's talk some more about how unwatchable you are, because I'm really concerned that you go around thinking you might be watchable.
Little Shop of Oops is the subject line. I don't know what that means.
Very unsuccessful baby doll out of 2017. It would eat your other dolls and then realistically poop. But like at any time, you never knew when it was going to happen.
Right. So he starts, "Hey Siri, skip podcast." There's a joke in there.
I don't know who this Siri person is. I got Android. I got my big, beautiful Android phone. Two more cameras than an iPhone. I don't know why, but it's two more. I started taking actual pictures with my big, beautiful phone. They're pretty good. I did some low light ones around a bonfire. Came out real good.
Oh.
Yeah. Those five lenses are important, I guess.
All right. So he says, Sunday we had a shopping episode of D&D. Our wizard was trying to sell her stuff of flowers to a flower shop owner. Amy is the flower shop owner, I guess. Not the wizard. Anyway.
Flowers were called Amy.
Oh, okay. Being not part of the scene, I decided to interject as an NPC and yell, "Feed the Amy." Yeah. Like from Little Shop of Horrors, I guess.
Yes.
Three of the others at the table laughed because they got the joke. One looked baffled and shocked because they thought it was a moment of racism. Racism? Okay. General verbal blackface is obviously, and I think there's supposed to be a word in there, but does that extend to specific impressions? Oh, general verbal blackface is obviously, I don't know if you've been off limits or offensive or whatever, but does that extend to specific impressions? I'm missing the how is would feed the Amy. Does that make reference to like some black character or
no? Well,
viral black YouTube or something? How is that?
Yeah, I get it. I think
okay.
So it should be feed me Amy.
Oh, it is. Sorry. It is. Feed me, Amy. It is.
Yes.
So what is that? I thought that was like from Little Shop of Horrors or something he meant.
It is. Feed me Seymour is from Little Shop of Horrors.
Feed me Seymour, yeah.
One could argue that Audrey 2 in Little Shop of Horrors has certain dialectical choices that come off as stereotypically black.
Oh, I guess I never really thought about that.
I'm guessing Azure Talon put a particular amount of oomph into his particular version of it.
Okay, well, he says, also, I never even said Little Shop of Horrors or Audrey 2, just did the voice and not Timu. Amazon and Instagram are showing me a ton of merch anyway, freaky.
That is how they get you.
Nightmare on Azure Talon Street. He signed it. Okay, so what you're saying is that if he was impersonating Audrey, and Audrey sounds, by some ears, sounds like a stereotypically black sounding voice, then that it would sound like he's mocking black people.
So, yeah, that's the only one I can get out of this.
Okay.
There's not a clear-cut answer here, obviously. I recall, and it was completely unconsciously, I am sure, I had a player in an old gaming group of mine that whenever they happened to be playing a black character that, like, we had specified, they had a different tone to their voice that was remarkably similar every time, even with the male ones, the female ones, whatever. There was always just a certain affectation to the voice that I was like, you're doing your black voice again. Like,
but I mean, Audrey too was voiced by, I'm seeing here, Levi Stubbs, who is an African-American gentleman. So
yeah,
maybe that was just how he talked.
At first blush, to me, doing an iconic line doesn't sound like that's just how that line was. I would need to know more about how you sounded when you did it and who the person was who thought it was racist and why they thought it was racist. Because it might say more about them than about you. But these are things that are always weird. Do you do, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die? Do you do that without an accent? It sounds kind of dumb if you do it without an accent. And it sounds kind of racist if you do it with an accent. And also,
the actor didn't.
It's Mandy Patinkin,
yeah,
who I spent a long time thinking was Hispanic because that was my first interaction with Mandy Patinkin for many years.
Okay.
So,
but what about say Pedro Pascal, who when he normally speaks or seems like it's his normal speaking voice, there's not a lot of what you might call Latino affect there, but he plays characters where he'll put that in or throw that in.
He does a lot.
And is that okay?
I don't know.
I noticed this
with.
I enjoy
it.
I noticed this with.
I don't know. This is something that has occurred to me before.
I noticed this with actors of Asian descent very often, because many times an actor who, you know, in interviews and stuff, they don't seem to have any accent or whatever, but sometimes they'll play Asian characters with very thick, very stereotypical accents. Like if it was a white person doing the same accent, it would be super offensive. But
no, and this is the thing. Kumail Nanjiani used to talk about this when he was back to just sort of doing day-to-day auditions for things. A line that he made himself draw was he refused to do up his accent, but he also refused to try and mask his accent. He was like, this is the level I talk at. It's normal because it's me and I'm just a person. This is how I'm going to do it. But a lot of people don't, and a lot of people can't. I mean, that was definitely a privilege on his part. Well, and a hill he chose to die on. I don't know. I also really enjoy all sorts of accents, and that is inherently problematic. So, like, in your situation here, yeah, there are some important questions here. If somebody, like, did the person who thought it sounded racist not know the line? Is there somebody who's like, I know that line from Little Shop of Horrors, but you did it, like, too black? Like, is that a thing? Because if that's a thing, I would love to hear what the version was that was deemed too black. Did you do it with a particularly exaggerated accent? I if you had asked me, does that line have an accent? I probably would have been like, no, I don't think so. But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, okay, yeah. So, like, I don't think there's a clear-cut answer here. I think given what you have described, we cannot say, is it you? Is it them? It's going to depend on a lot of factors here. And in a very similar situation, it may be different. This is exactly the sort of the area that we probably shouldn't have sweeping rules about. We need to just take
people into consideration. There's no way the joke can work if you're not impersonating that character.
Yes.
That's the whole joke. I mean,
but you could do it. I could see doing a version that essentially takes any accent or affectation out of it while still just emphasizing the same spots, but it's not going to sound, it's going to sound weird. And yeah. And is there something black about how he did it other than the fact that he was a black person who did it? But see, okay, here's a great counterpoint. Here's another example of a black person doing a voice they came up with that they do not find particularly offensive that made for an iconic character. And that character went on to be Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel really bad for the guy who did it, and it messed up his life real bad. And dude is black. Dude came up with that voice. Dude did not think that voice was racist. That voice was racist. Like, I agree. The money was on his side. Like, it should have been fine. And I don't think of any malice on his part, or like he needs to get educated or anything like that. Like, that's how it broke down. And in the same way that nobody can say for sure, like, this is definitely racist, this is definitely not right. Like, you can't, like, this one is not that controversial. It's basically that dude and George Lucas are both like, that's not racist. And every other human is like, that's racist. And I'm sorry that one of those two people happens to be black and came up with it. I wish you no ill. I do not think you did anything wrong. What was created was pretty racist.
Well, see, this is what I'm getting at. So, first of all, people do speak in a variety of ways, and
I try not to.
And that's awesome. I love it all. I think it's great. And I don't have a problem in principle with someone who doesn't speak with a particular dialect or whatever, speaking that way. The problem comes in when they're like, when they're making fun of a group of people, or it's sort of insulting or degrading to that whole group. And that's what I'm saying about some of the really stereotypical accents that I hear some people who belong to that group, but it is making fun of people who talk like that.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that seems problematic, even though the person doing it does belong to that group. I mean, obviously they're allowed. I mean, nobody I can say they can't do it, but
there can be a thing. I actually had this recently. Somebody showed me a bit that a comedian had done. Stand-up comedian basically making fun of hip-hop. And they thought it was really funny, and I watched it and I didn't find it very funny. And there's a variety of reasons. I think I like hip-hop better than this person does, but one of the ones that stuck out for me, this was a fairly not yet, like, this was an older clip, and this was a comedian who had not made it at that point and was talking about hip-hop artists who were, like, huge. And, you know, 50 Cent, Beyonce, like, millionaires all over the time. So, and yet, punching up, still, something about it felt like punching down.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know exactly what it was, but it feels like I don't feel good about this. And it's so hard to explain. They weren't in a position of privilege, but it just had that vibe to it. But I mean, things are as problematic as people believe them to be problematic. So
sure.
If somebody at your group thought it was racist, then it was racist to them. If other people at your group thought it was funny, then it was funny to them. And then you just got to hash out, what does it mean to whip? And you guys got to make it work. Like, yeah. It's not something you can walk in knowing I'm not in the wrong here, or I am in the wrong here. It's the same thing with Jar Jar Binks. If somehow we had all been like, that doesn't sound racist, then probably would have been fine. A problem.
Right.
Like, right. That's not, racism doesn't have to have intent. It's about effect. And that doesn't make it super fair, but racism has never been particularly fair. That's the important gem I want to give you all today when you leave this place. If I can take one thing, racism has never been particularly fair. Even in its golden age. And we all know when that was, the golden age of racism, you know. Yeah, back then. But even then, it wasn't, I mean, it was a lot of things. Fair? It
wasn't fair.
Wasn't, I mean, it tried, but, you know.
Oh, my God.
We're still watching Crapopolis over on Hulu, the new Dan Harmon animated show.
Mm-mm, I haven't heard of that.
Yes. So, every fall, Fox starts their Sunday night lineup again, which has The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers and Great North, and then some other animated show that fails after one season.
Okay.
Every single time. So this time it's called Crapopolis with a K. And it's Dan Harmon made it. It's an animated thing by Dan Harmon, the guy who did Rick and Morty and Community and Dan Harmon. It is essentially about a young man who is the king of an ancient city in like ancient Hellenic Greece. And he is descended from a goddess and a monster. And he has a couple of siblings who are half related and things. And he is determined to start civilization. And it essentially becomes a family situation comedy, because his siblings are may or may not be involved, and the gods don't understand why you want to do these things and all this. But the big thing about it is it's a crazy awesome cast list. The main guy is Richard Iowade, who we love. The woman who played Pam on Archer plays his half-sister, Stupendous, who's this giant muscle-bound gladiator type. Duncan Trussell does his half brother, Hippocampus, who's kind of a fish person. His dad, the Chimera, is voiced by Matt Berry. His mom, Deliria, the goddess, is voiced by Hannah Waddingham from Ted Lasso and Broadway fame. And there's just tons of really great guest stars in it. So yeah, Jane Lynch was in a recent one. It's getting into its own. We're kind of digging it. It took a little bit, but I don't know what made me think of that, but
it actually sounds interesting.
It's also probably kind of racist, so it could be. But yeah, they had a whole episode where he had to invent a justice system and things like that.
It starts out though, are they already in a city or a city state situation? Or?
Yes, he's in a city. The very first episode is he's the king of the city, and he's trying to come up with ways to make things peaceful rather than how they currently are of all the city states fighting. And in fact, it starts out with a different barbaric city state whose main guy is voiced by Keith David, hurrah, is going to attack them, and he has to sort of deal with that. But yeah, I don't remember why I thought of that, but I did. It's a good show though so far.
Okay.
Simpsons is still pretty sad. I've been watching every episode this season. They're not very good. I'm getting ready to watch that Bodies show. Have you seen this Bodies show on Netflix?
Yeah, we started watching that.
How? What do you think?
So far, so good. We haven't gotten that far into it, but I mean, we're going to keep watching it.
I think we'll check it out once we're done with what we've got. All right. I thought
the start of it was real good.
I'm just killing time now because I don't want to go back to my regular life, but I might as well. Okay. If you enjoyed this, you go to the blog and tell us your thoughts on these things. Have you seen these shows? How racist do you think Azure Talent is? From somewhat to extremely. Startup well, poll not at all in the blog. I don't know how you do that. but do YouTube comments of just how racist you think Azure Talent is. When in doubt, aim high. It's better for engagement things. So what I'm saying is go to YouTube and call Azure Talent a racist, please. Also, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com with your own comments and questions and other racist slip-ups that Azure Talent may have made amongst his so-called friends. also, how watchable do you think William is? Here's a hint. He's been on this episode the whole time. I bet you haven't even noticed. Now we're in November, so we're going to move away from candy-based economy into turkey-based. No pun intended. Economy. Until December, when we switch to a pine cone based Christmas present futures,
ghost based
economy.
Yeah,
it's me, the ghost based killer.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.